Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
In the quiet town of Villisca, Iowa, a gruesome crime would shatter the peace and leave a haunted mystery that endures to this day. 8 lives brutally ended in the dead of night, the culprit still unknown over a century later. Today, we unravel the chilling tale of the Villisca axe murders. Welcome to another episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where the realms of true crime, the supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Matt.
I'm Jordan.
Let's dive right in. Our story begins with the Moore family. Picture a typical Midwestern family in the early 20th century. Josiah Moore, or Joe as friends called him, was a pillar of the community. As a successful businessman, Joe ran a prosperous farm equipment business and was well regarded for his hard work and integrity. His wife, Sarah Moore, was the epitome of a devoted mother and active community member. Together, they were raising 4 bright and spirited children: Herman, the oldest at 11, Catherine, 10, Boyd, 7, and little Paul, just 5. The Moore's home was often filled with the sounds of laughter and play. Herman and Boyd could often be found running around outside, engaging in all sorts of adventures. Catherine, a nurturing older sister, was always nearby, ready to join in or help out. And Paul, with his cherubic face, was the heart of the family, adored by everyone. On June 9, 1912, a Sunday like any other, the Moore family attended the Children's Day service at the local Presbyterian church. It was a special day filled with joy and community spirit. The church was abuzz with the laughter and chatter of children, excited to participate in the evening's program. Sarah, always involved, had helped organize the event, and the children had their parts to play. That evening, the Moore family was joined by two young friends, Lena and Denise Stillinger. The Stillinger sisters, aged 12 and 8, were excited for their sleepover at the Moore's house. It was the perfect end to a joyous day, with the children's laughter echoing through the house as they settled in for the night. The house on 508 East 2nd Street was a modest yet welcoming home. After the church service, the children played games and chatted about the events of the day. Sarah and Joe ensured everyone was ready for bed, the atmosphere filled with the comforting routines of the family life. Little did they know this ordinary night would be their last. As the town of Villisca went to sleep, no one could have imagined the horrors that would unfold within the Moore household. This peaceful community, where doors were left unlocked and neighbors knew each other by name, would soon be engulfed by a nightmare. The day had ended like any other, but what happened next would change the town of Villisca forever. The Moore family, along with their young guests, lay asleep, unaware of the dark presence that would soon invade their home. The stage was set for one of the most horrifying and enduring mysteries in American history.
Why do I always feel like it's the pillars of the community?
Because it usually is, for some reason. I don't understand it either. A lot about this case I don't necessarily understand, but...
It seems to always be those kinds of people. Like, it's always like these people are the kindest people that you ever met. The people that were the kind of people who'd give you the shirt off their back. It just seems like it's always those people.
My thing is, especially back in this time, people didn't really speak ill of the dead. So even if they were the most horrible family, I don't think they would have. That's my only thing. These guys could have been monsters and nobody just wanted to say anything.
That's true. They weren't going to say anything bad about them. Like, they might have been terrible, but we're not going to say a word about it.
Yeah. And that could be very well what happened, but we don't know. We just don't know.
So anyway, a peaceful night turned into not peaceful, I'm sure.
Yep. And we're going to flash forward a little bit here.
Woohoo! I love time travel.
The next morning, June 10th, 1912, dawned with an eerie silence hanging over the Moore household. Normally bustling with the sounds of children playing and the daily routines of life, the house was unnaturally quiet. Mary Peckham, the Moore's neighbor, went about her morning chores, but couldn't shake the feeling that something was amiss. Mary had grown accustomed to hearing the Moore children up and about, their laughter often spilling into the yard, but today there was nothing. No movement, no sound. As the hours ticked by, her concern grew. She decided to check on the Moores, thinking perhaps they had fallen ill. Mary knocked on the door, but received no response. She tried peering through the windows, but the curtains were drawn tight. Her unease turned to alarm. She hurried to fetch Josiah's brother, Ross Moore, hoping he might have a key or an explanation for the strange quiet. Ross, equally concerned, wasted no time. Together they returned to the Moore house. Ross used his spare key to unlock the front door, the heavy creak echoing ominously in the stillness. As he stepped inside, the oppressive silence seemed to swallow him whole. Ross called out, his voice trembling slightly, but there was no reply. He moved from room to room, his dread mounting with each step. When he reached the upstairs bedroom, his worst fears were realized. The sight before him was beyond comprehension. In each bed, he found the bodies of his brother's family bludgeoned to death. The scenes were horrific, each one a testament to the nightmare of unimaginable violence. The children, innocent and defenseless, lay lifeless, their small forms forever stilled. Ross stumbled into the guest room where he discovered the bodies of Lena and Denise Stillinger. The same brutal fate had befallen them. The weapon, an axe, lay discarded nearby, its blade stained with blood. The sheer brutality and senselessness of the crime was overwhelming. The news spread like wildfire through Villisca, sending shockwaves of fear and disbelief. How could such a heinous act happen in their quiet town? Who could harbor such monstrous intent? The entire community was plunged into mourning and confusion. As the authorities arrived and began their investigation, the full scale of the horror became clear. The Moores and their young guest had been attacked as they slept, their faces covered with cloths, as if the killer couldn't bear to look upon his victims. The brutality of the crime and the innocence of the victims left Villisca reeling, its residents haunted by the unanswered question, who could have committed such a heinous act? The Villisca axe murders would go down in history as one of America's most chilling unsolved crimes, a dark stain on the peaceful fabric of a small town. The search for answers had just begun, and the journey would be long and fraught with mystery and suspicion. I definitely made that more PG.
I'm sure that you did. So how many victims total?
8.
Good Lord. So they covered their faces?
Yep.
Says a lot to me about who could have done it.
Could have been someone that knew the Stillinger girls, because they're friends with the family of the Stillinger girls. It definitely tells me that it's not a stranger.
You would think so, because that at the very least shows remorse. And at the very least.
The fact that someone could brutally kill 6 children, because 2 adults and 6 children, 4 of them were the Moore families, and then the 2 Stillinger girls, that is...
It's incomprehensible. Brutal. It's brutal. And with an axe, let alone, that's so up close and personal. What a weapon of choice.
Yeah. There's another case in New Orleans where it was very similar. Obviously, it was more than one family. But he would actually get the axe from the victims' homes. Because back in that day, everybody had an axe.
And that would make sense. I don't have an axe, but Lord, I've got plenty of random tools sitting around.
I tell you, and this kind of goes into the other cases, because there's a serial killer who was using victims' axes to kill him. And my first response would be to get rid of an axe. That's just how my mind works. Or put it somewhere where nobody could find it.
Like, pretty simple. The only problem with that would be if you depend on a wood stove and wood to keep warm. You would need that pretty often. It would be really inconvenient. But at the same time, safety is also really friggin' important.
Yeah, I don't think you'd actually need a full axe. You could just have the axe head and then use it as a wedge. I'm pretty sure that would work just fine if you use a hammer. But then it would be the list guy of hammer murders, which doesn't sound as good.
If someone really wanted to murder people, then they would find a way with something that you had, but I don't know. An axe is just such a weirdly specific choice for a weapon, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. Granted, it's got 2 ways to kill. Seems to be so many murders, especially back in the day, from axes.
It's definitely gonna do it.
And it's weird, because you just don't really see axes as much as you used to.
Maybe it's because people were using them to kill people.
Apparently.
What do I know?
Nothing.
Thanks.
In the immediate aftermath of the discovery, local law enforcement sprang into action, attempting to secure the Moore household as a crime scene. However, the small town of Villisca had never faced a crime of this magnitude, and their lack of experience quickly became apparent. Word of the gruesome murders spread rapidly, and soon the house was swarming with curious onlookers. Neighbors, friends, and even strangers wandered through the Moore home, driven by morbid curiosity. They trampled through rooms, leaving their own traces and unknowingly contaminated crucial evidence. In an era before modern forensic techniques, the chances of preserving a pristine crime scene were slim. Among the chaos, County Coroner Dr. Lindquist began his grim task. His examination revealed that the murders had likely occurred between midnight and 5 a.m. The killer had used Josiah Moore's own axe, striking the victims repeatedly in their sleep. It was a calculated act of savagery. The faces of the victims covered with cloths as if to dehumanize them and conceal the horror of the deed. Dr. Lindquist noted the peculiar attention to detail in the crime scene. Not only were the victims' faces covered, but mirrors and glass surfaces in the house were draped with cloth. This odd detail suggested a methodical killer, one who took deliberate steps to avoid looking at the reflection of his actions. The initial investigation was fraught with challenges. Sheriff Olrin Jackson and his deputies conducted interviews and followed leads, but they were hampered by the contamination of the crime scene and the lack of clear evidence. The search for a motive was equally perplexing. The Moores were well-liked with no known enemies, and the randomness of the attack added to the confusion. Despite the efforts of local law enforcement, the investigation quickly hit a wall. The brutality of the crime suggested a deep-seated rage, but who could harbor such animosity towards the Moors and their innocent guest? The town of Villisca was left in a state of fear and confusion. Residents locked their doors and windows, whispering their fears to one another as they tried to make sense of the senseless. The authorities reached out for help, and soon, private detectives and state officials joined the investigation. Newspapers across the country picked up the story, adding to the pressure and scrutiny. The town of Villisca, once a peaceful and tight-knit community, was now at the center of a national sensation. Its streets filled with reporters and outsiders seeking a glimpse of the macabre. As days turned into weeks and weeks into months, the investigation continued but yielded few solid leads. The Moore's home, once filled with laughter and life, stood as a silent monument to the violence that had shattered their world. The unanswered questions hung heavy in the air. Who could commit such an atrocity, and why? The legacy of the Villisca Axe murders would be one of the enduring mysteries. Despite the dedication and efforts of countless investigators over the years, the case remained unsolved. The quiet town of Villisca was forever marked by the darkness of the fateful night, its residents haunted by the specter of an unknown killer still at large. The search for answers continued, but for the people of Villisca, the fear and uncertainty lingered, casting a long shadow over their once peaceful lives.
I find it really odd that they covered the mirrors. I feel like that shows that not only did they not want to see the people when they were murdering them, but they didn't want to see themselves commit the act.
Which kind of, in my mind, tells me it was somebody that had some kind of mental health issue.
That, where it was someone who was really close to them, and they just couldn't imagine themselves doing that to people they were close to, and just couldn't imagine committing the act themselves, and couldn't physically see themselves doing that kind of thing.
But that brings up the question, then why did they do it?
Well, maybe they did have a mental issue. I don't know. It's really bizarre. I don't think I've heard of that before. I don't think I've ever heard of somebody covering all of the reflective anything in a home before murdering somebody.
There's videos online of people investigating because 8 people murdered, suspected of being haunted. So there's videos of people walking in the house. And it's one of those really old houses that literally, as soon as you walk in, everybody in the house will know that you're there because the floor creaks, the walls are very thin. So the fact that he was able to get in there and murder 8 people seemingly without waking any of them up, that part is what I don't understand.
In a way, it makes sense to me. They had 4 kids. They were probably used to the kids getting up, going to the bathroom, going back and laying down. Getting up, going to the other bed, laying back down. Getting up, going to get a drink of water, laying back down.
But again, bludgeoning someone with an axe, they're going to make noises.
Oh no, 100%. I agree with that, but at least the sneaking in part. That part makes sense in my head. The rest of it, no.
Going to the bathroom would be different than opening the front door, walking in the house, walking around the entire house, putting up cloths over the mirrors and reflective surfaces, and then going and killing them one by one.
Especially with an axe. Because I wouldn't think that's quiet, even if they didn't make a sound somehow. The act itself, I can't imagine, would be a quiet sound.
So how did he murder all these people?
What if it wasn't one person?
To me, it almost makes sense that he somehow drugged them beforehand.
Yeah. Could they test for that?
No, it was 1912.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
But that is the only thing that makes sense to me, is that they were drugged somehow. He got there, covered up everything, somehow drugged them, and waited to kick in and then murdered them. I don't know. To me, it seems like there was 9 people there at the beginning of the night, and he drugged them and then murdered everybody and then just left.
That honestly makes more sense than sneaking in. It really does.
Yeah. I've got 3 possible suspects. Last one, you cannot guess in a million years who it is.
Probably not. I'm not good at guessing, though.
You're not.
Thanks.
But even if you could, I don't think you would guess who it is. It's aliens. Just kidding.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Suspect 1. Our first suspect is Frank F. Jones, a name that resonated with both power and influence in Valeska. Frank Jones was more than just a prominent resident. He was an Iowa state senator and a successful businessman. To the outside world, he appeared to be a man of integrity and stature. But beneath the surface, there were dark whispers of rivalry and personal vendettas. Jones owned the Jones Store, a thriving business in Valeska. He had employed Josiah Moore for many years before Josiah left to start his own competing business. This departure marked the beginning of a bitter rivalry. Josiah's new business quickly prospered, taking valuable clients away from Jones, including a lucrative John Deere dealership. Business rivalry is a common tale, but in this case, it was said to have turned deeply personal. Rumors circulated that Josiah Moore had engaged in an affair with Jones's daughter-in-law. Whether true or not, the mere suggestion was enough to stir the pot of small-town gossip and create animosity. While the business rivalry and personal grudge provided a strong motive, evidence against Jones was scarce. On the surface, he had the means to hire someone to carry out the murders, and his status could potentially protect him from suspicion. However, no direct evidence linked him to the crime scene. The theory that Jones orchestrated the murders out of revenge gained traction. Some speculated that he might have hired a hitman, someone skilled in avoiding detection. This theory was fueled by the brutal efficiency of the killings and the seemingly premeditation involved, yet there were significant gaps. No witnesses, no forensic evidence, and no concrete proof could tie Frank Jones directly to the crime. His powerful position might have offered him some protection, but it also placed him squarely in the public eye, making any involvement incredibly risky. As the investigation unfolded, the town was divided. Some believed in Jones's innocence, seeing him as a convenient scapegoat for the town's anxieties. Others were convinced of his guilt, pointing to the strong motive and his ability to orchestrate such a plot. The lack of clear evidence left room for speculation and doubt. Could a powerful man like Frank F. Jones have orchestrated the murders to settle a personal and professional score? Or was he merely a scapegoat for the town's suspicions, an easy target for their need to find a villain in this horrific tale? Jones's involvement remains speculative, a tangled web of motive without clear proof. The suspicion surrounded him added another layer to the already complex and haunting story of the Villisca Axe murders, leaving the truth obscured by a shroud of uncertainty.
Okay, I don't know why, but a gut feeling says I don't like this guy for it.
Yeah, it's not my favorite either because it does seem like he's a scapegoat.
It feels like it's weirdly convenient.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Obviously, if he did do it, it would be risky because he would be the first suspect because they do have history. I don't like the rumors that Josiah had engaged affairs with his daughter-in-law. It just seemed like they're trying to make a motive.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem nearly close to solid. And there's really not any evidence almost at all anyway. But my gut feeling says no.
Yeah, I'm the same way. That's what all the suspects have in them is a lot of them are more convenient, a little too convenient for me. But that kind of shows that really there's no evidence in this case whatsoever. So you're grasping at straws, trying to look for anything that could possibly point you in the right direction. Not my favorite suspect, but again, grasping for straws here. So they're all pretty much going to be the same way. Suspect number two. Our second suspect, William Blackie Mansfeld, cast a darker shadow over the Villisca Axe murders. Mansfeld was no stranger to violence, his name synonymous with terror. Known as a transient and a suspected serial killer, Mansfeld's brutal act had already left a trail of blood across multiple states. His notoriety made him a compelling suspect in the Villisca case. Mansfeld had been linked to a series of gruesome axe murders in Colorado and Kansas. Each crime bore chilling similarities, entire families slaughtered in their sleep, the murder weapon often an axe left at the scene, and a methodical, almost ritualistic covering of mirrors and windows. Eerie parallels to the Villisca murders could not be ignored. Mansfeld's criminal history was as dark as it was extensive. He was a drifter moving from town to town, leaving chaos in his wake. His unpredictable nature and violent tendencies made him a prime suspect, but there was more to the story than just his bloodstained past. Despite the overwhelming circumstantial evidence, Mansfeld had an alibi for the night of the Villisca murders. Records indicated he was in Illinois, far from the quiet streets of Villisca. This alibi complicated the case against him. Investigators delved deeper into Mansfeld's life, scrutinizing his movements and connections. The pattern of his crimes suggested a meticulous and calculated mind. He didn't just kill, he terrorized, leaving communities in fear. The methodical way he draped cloth over mirrors and the windows hinted at a killer who didn't want to face his own reflection, a chilling psychological detail that mirrored the Villisca crime scene. Despite the compelling similarities, Mansfeld's alibi was strong enough to cast doubt. Some believed he might have had an accomplice, someone who carried out the Villisca murders while he provided himself an ironclad alibi. Others speculated that he could have traveled to Villisca under an alias, his transient lifestyle making it difficult to track his exact whereabouts. The theory that Mansfeld was a traveling murderer who struck Villisca during his spree remains a tantalizing possibility. His known history of violence, combined with the striking similarities in the method of his murders, kept him on the suspect list despite his alibi. Was he a cunning killer who evaded capture by exploiting his transient lifestyle? Or was his connection to the Villisca murders purely coincidental? The case against William Blackie Mansfeld is as murky as it is compelling. His name is forever etched in the annals of American criminal history. A dark figure whose possible involvement in the Villisca Axe murders adds another layer. The lack of definitive evidence leaves room for endless speculation, ensuring that the mystery continues to haunt those who seek the truth.
Okay, so I like this guy for it significantly better.
I like the killer for this kill, too. I believe it may be related to the other kills. I just don't think he's the actual killer.
Yeah, because he's got, like, an alibi or whatever.
No, I don't think he's actually the killer for any of them.
Oh.
If you're talking about multiple instances of the same case.
Okay, I'm following what you're putting down.
Someone who's methodical, someone who's almost overly analytical, someone who definitely could stay off the radar. So my theory is that someone basically used him as a scapegoat to cover up his own crimes, which is why he has an alibi. The one time that he messed up was this time. I think their cases are definitely connected.
This is the only time I've ever heard of such an MO like this. It's bizarre, and it's just so specific.
Like I said, the covering up the mirrors and stuff, that is definitely something that you don't really see a whole lot of. But the axe part of it, especially back in those days, were actually pretty common. I'd say back then it was the most common murder weapon.
Which is so bizarre.
Yeah.
Really bizarre. But the covering of the mirrors and everything else, that is the part that gets me. And you said there was a string of other ones that had everything else covered like that. So that's what gets me there.
Yeah, there was several other instances where the same thing happened in Colorado, Kansas. And I will cover those murders in more detail, not in this episode, but in another episode. Definitely a serial killer. I do think that this one is involved in it, but also it could be totally separate, basically a copycat. But if it's not, if it's part of the same serial killer, I don't think Mansfeld is the actual killer. I think he's just the scapegoat.
That kind of makes sense because they have to be so methodical for it.
Yeah. And the fact that this guy got in and out without being recognized.
They would have had to have put him at that exact place at all those times. That's a lot.
So I think definitely the killer that this case is involved with the other ones. I just don't think Mansfeld is the actual murderer. I think it's someone who's a lot smarter and a lot more meticulous. But I could be wrong. Never usually am. Suspect number 3. Our final suspect brings a twist of psychological intrigue to the Villisca axe murders. Reverend George Kelly was an illiterate preacher whose eccentricity and troubled mind made him stand out in the community, known for his erratic behavior and history of mental illness. Kelly's presence in Villisca on the night of the murders would later cast a long, dark shadow over his life. Reverend George Kelly had arrived in Villisca to attend the Children's Day service at the Presbyterian Church. Small in stature and peculiar in demeanor, he was a man whose oddities were often the subject of town gossip. Kelly, who claimed to have visions and a direct line to God, was both intriguing and unsettling to those around him. Kelly was known for his unpredictable behavior. He moved frequently, drifting from town to town, preaching wherever he could find an audience. His sermons were as eccentric as he was, filled with fire and brimstone, often leaving his congregants in a state of unease. His presence in Villisca was no different. He was noticed, but not necessarily welcomed. On the night of June 9, 1912, Kelly attended the Children's Day service, observing the Moors and their guests. The next morning, he left Villisca on an early train just hours before the discovery of the murders. The seemingly hasty departure, coupled with his erratic behavior, would later become crucial points of suspicion. 5 years after the murders in 1917, Kelly was arrested and confessed to the crime. His confession, however, was riddled with inconsistencies. He described details that seemed plausible, but many believed his confession was coerced. Kelly's fragile mental state and the intense interrogation tactics of the time raised serious doubts about the validity of his admission. Kelly's history of mental illness was well documented. He had been institutionalized multiple times. Some believe that his obsession with the case and his delusions could have driven him to commit the murders. Others argued that his confession was the product of a desperate man broken down by relentless questioning. Despite his confession, Kelly was never conclusively proven to be the murderer. His trial was a spectacle marked by sensational headlines and public fascination. The inconsistencies in his confession and lack of concrete evidence led to his eventual acquittal, yet the cloud of suspicion never fully lifted, leaving many to wonder if he had indeed committed the heinous act. Reverend George Kelly's troubled mind and erratic behavior made him an easy target for suspicion. His story raises profound questions about the nature of guilt and the fragility of the justice system. Was Kelly a deeply disturbed individual who succumbed to his darkest impulses, or was he another victim of an era that struggled to understand mental illness?
Okay, so I will admit, you're right. This one came way out of left field.
Yeah, and this one is just too convenient. I do not believe the confession at all.
No, it seems forced. And I do 100% believe that they could force a confession out of somebody back then.
Yeah, especially someone who's mentally unstable like he was. He was definitely unstable. The fact that he left the day after the crimes isn't proof that he's guilty to me, because he obviously moved from place to place. he came there specifically for that Children's Day, whatever.
He was probably going to leave regardless.
Yeah. And at that point, when he left, the bodies hadn't even been discovered at that point. So it's not like he heard about it and then quickly left town.
It's not like he was sitting there waiting for them to be discovered, watch for them to be discovered, and then was like, okay, it's been discovered. I'm leaving now.
A lot of people think that he is a killer. I just think he's a mentally disturbed person who doesn't seem to have the meticulousness needed for this crime.
No, the person who did this, some parts of it in a way fit. The not mentally there part in a way fits, but the meticulousness part, it's not there.
The placing cloths over mirrors and stuff almost to me seems like an OCD thing, like a high-functioning mental illness. It just doesn't fit this guy.
No, it doesn't fit right to me.
This guy more seems like schizophrenia to me, and it just doesn't seem like he'd be that careful and methodical.
It's personality seems, the best I can say is messy. I don't know a better word to describe it at the moment. The only word I can think of right now is methodical. I am not coming up with good words today. I'm sorry. Think about it. There were 8 people, and they had to be methodical in order to do that. And the person who did this, something this person could have done. I don't think anyway.
That's why I don't believe this guy is the killer. Again, I think he's just too convenient. He had some kind of mental health. I don't think we ever really know for sure what. But it seemed like schizophrenia. Especially with the whole talking to God thing.
Yeah, which I hope that he got the help he needed. Probably didn't.
The Villisca Axe murders have cast a long and unyielding shadow over the small town of Villisca, Iowa. Despite extensive investigations and numerous suspects, the true identity of the killer remains unanswered. Theories continue to abound, each as compelling and as elusive as the last, but the mystery endures. Over a century has passed since that fateful night, yet the echoes of the tragedy still resonate deeply. The Moore family and their young guests were brutally taken in an act of unimaginable violence. Their story is not just a tale of horror, but a poignant reminder of life's fragility and the darkness that can lurk within even the most peaceful communities. The house at 508 East 2nd Street stands as a somber monument to this grim chapter in history. Once filled with the laughter and warmth of family life, it is now a macabre tourist attraction. Visitors from around the world come to walk through its silent rooms, feeling the weight of the past pressing down upon them. The air is thick with a sense of unease, as if the walls themselves remember the horrors they have witnessed. Those who enter the Moore House today are greeted by an atmosphere frozen in time. The children's toys are still scattered in their room, the furniture arranged as it was on that dreadful night. It's as if the families might return at any moment, their presence felt in every shadowy corner, yet the silence is deafening, a stark reminder of the violence that shattered this once happy home. Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check out our links in the description below.
As always, we keep you guessing.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.